Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Well, okay. Hi, everybody. At this time from Phoenix, where the hour is 10 o'clock at night, and the next two broadcasts, I believe, I don't know for sure, will be from Finland. And then Tuija comes to the United States, and we've been, you know, in this intensive preparation for the upcoming conference, forerunners of the lights, illuminating and manifesting the divine plan. I think it's an exciting title and brings us into the universal mind and the ability of the universal mind to see to the building of the foundation on which the second ray will place itself, and some aspects of the first ray as well, but the first ray is also helpful in building the foundation of the human being. I realized that I didn't get a proper chance to, well, I had the chance, I didn't take it, to welcome you during the Science of Triangles webinar just a couple of days ago. So I just want to say welcome to Alexandra and to Annette, and Antoinette and Barbara and Catherine. We'll have to see. Maybe it's a technical matter that she has her hand up with. So, Michael, maybe you can look into that. Chris, welcome. Connie and Frederick, George, Karen, Catherine, Leslie, Margot, Mariana, Marissa, Mariut, Natni, Nienke, Rebecca, Risto, Sam, Tiu, Zenaidi, and Veronica. Welcome, everybody. Glad you're here. And so far over here on the staff side, it's Michael and myself, and I'm assuming Tuija will arrive, and she'll be put over there too. Michael, if you'd be so kind to do that when she's able to come, if she's able to come. Well, let's just have a little alignment. The thought is to clear away those aggregations of energy found within the personality, especially in the realm of the astral body and in the realm of Kama Manas, that mixture we call desire mind. It's very hard to see through those factors. They've been with us, it seems, forever. And something entirely new awaits us on the other side. And every once in a while, there is a breakthrough, and we get a little notion of what these unexpected, awaiting energies really are. Because, as I say, when we talk about them, we're using an old language. And we... we have to find a new language for the new planes of nature. Somehow we can manage that, I think. And certainly the language of the soul is in process of developing, but the language of the monad still remains something of a far distant hope. And, you know, I've been doing some programs, and there's a book called On the Monad. You can find that on Makara. And there are a number of programs called Identify as Being, and we're working out the inhibitions that prevent a glamourless perception of reality. Even on the level of the monad, there are veils which have to be lifted. So we constitute ourselves a group, wherever we may be on the planet. And we are available to bring in a greater light. And we always will understand that darkness will retreat when the light is beamed in upon the previously darkened area. So we work for the retreat of the darkened tendencies which throw us right back into the limitations of the lunar vehicles. And we want to come into a relationship with these vehicles where they really are useful to us. And not a great inhibiting power, such as, you know, St. Paul, a great Scorpio in history. He found the lunar vehicles a tremendously veiling and limiting power, and he wanted to burn through those limitations. Being as he was, I believe, a first-ray monad who applied the dictum, "The kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force." I think he did manage. And he has a luminous fifth ray, let's call it a submonadic ray, the 1 and 5. So it strikes me that since the counterforce uses so much the first ray and the fifth ray in combination, someone like Hilarion Paul is a perfect opposition to their attempts to master humanity and take away its will, especially its goodwill, and land us in some kind of technological nightmare rather than what technology can mean, and ultimately destroy the planet. So our work then is to pit ourselves together against the movement towards the dividing up of humanity along the lines of separativeness, and even so far as Madame Rorick said, to destroy the planet. Against that will we place ourselves with our own willed good, our own goodwill, and love and light. We will begin our reading pretty much where we left off. We were talking about what it is that the man encounters as he treads this arduous path of ridding himself of glamour. And at first he quite succumbs, and later he realizes the desirability of ridding himself of this obstruction. This we dealt with a little while ago, and it's still part of the first encounter. He wants oneness, but he seeks it in the wrong places, in the realm of material possessions. It's amazing what some of the collectors will do. And part of it is to create museums, yes, but you can sense the psyche behind these huge collections. Not too long ago, I was in the Hearst sort of castle. I guess they call it a castle, and what is gathered there is just more than one can imagine, as if that could possibly create a true and lasting happiness. But, you know, the sense of dualism starts to grow, and by the time we leave the petals of ignorance, petal number 1, 2, and 3, we've entered the 4, 5, and 6 of the egoic lotus, slowly unfolding, and these are petals in which the higher of the pairs of opposites become, the higher becomes much more evident. And by the time we finish with the love petals and have opened the final 6th petal, we really are ready for that great event in the life of the disciple we call the baptism of purification, the 2nd initiation. So, very vivid is the 2nd stage as a man fights, entering the battle between the pairs of opposites. We might say that there's a battle on the etheric and physical plane. These two contend. There's a battle between desire and aspiration on the astral plane, a higher form of desire, and under the guidance of the soul to a certain extent. And on the mental plane, finally, we will have a battle between the lower mind, concrete mind, and the higher mind. And as we're preparing for the 3rd initiation, this is the battle we have to fight, to not let the mind, the lower mind, become the slayer of the real. So we seek, as has been stated, the reality which shines underneath or under the envelope which envelops it. Sort of, you know, from the old commentary here, this wants to, I always have a little bit of interference here. Everybody wants to correct my computer, and often at the most awkward moments. So we need true perception, and that involves ridding ourselves of glamour, ridding ourselves of kama manas as a limitation, ridding ourselves of illusion, and entering into the perception of the soul and beyond. Yes, it is still illusion of a kind. But I've said, you know, and DK has said, not until the 9th initiation are we rid of the illusion, which is, well, pronounced upon the cosmic physical plane. But then again, it doesn't end, you know, and there are always these veils. Every time one of the units of life within the universal logos comes forth in emanation, there's going to be a veiling. And there's going to be a limitation of perception, of reality. So way down here, immersed in a quite dense type of matter, we are very, very limited in terms of seeing reality. So now let's go on. You know, somehow the foundation there is so important. And many of us, let's say, are fighting on the astral plane just the way Arjuna did in the old days of the Battle of Kurukshetra. And Kurukshetra has taken on a symbolic meaning in the life of every aspirant. And basically, DK is telling us, for the sake of progress and usefulness, see that you battle, he is saying. Now, there's a few things here that I want to just go over someday soon. This group and other such groups should work as a group under the direction of their master. It will be Master DK in this case, in piercing the world glamour. Notice that laser-like beam that we use. The laser beam is under the fifth ray, and we're going to find that the fifth ray is very useful in piercing, understanding, and ridding ourselves of glamour. So in piercing the world glamour and letting in some light and illumination, so that men may walk from henceforth more truly on the way in safety. So he has chosen some aspirants. There were 9 altogether, and whatever their stage may be, even if they may be taking the second initiation or beyond that, he still calls them aspirants. I have therefore chosen for participation in this work several aspirants whose tendency is to succumb to glamour. You know, they all had, all except one really, a strong sixth ray, and another one who counterbalanced the sixth ray, which put him en rapport with the world of glamour. He balanced that sixth ray with a powerful, powerful fifth ray, as we will see. So he has also chosen 2 who are less prone to glamour than are the others. Their relative freedom from glamour was one of the reasons why I chose them. And these 2 are DLR and DPR. Now, they have both of them, a tremendous non-glamorous combination of energies. They are both first-ray souls, and indeed it is the will that is realistic and overcomes desire, when it does overcome desire. I think in the case of some madmen, it never does. You know, we look at some of the members of the Axis power, and their will somehow reinforced their desire. But this was Charles Hill, and he was born in Cancer, so it puts him en rapport with the ocean of astral substance, pretty much in the middle of it. And it was 130 years ago, roughly, that he was born, and he had a very unusual profession. He was an academic person. He was a student of insects. He was an entomologist, and his glamours were not serious because he had such a very strong look at double fifth-ray personality, fifth-ray mind with that first-ray soul. So the only thing that really brought him a rapport with that sea of glamorous reaction was his six-ray astral body. You always have to look in your ray makeup as to what may bring you in touch with the ocean of glamour and with misleading, deluding emotional response. And his words were detachment, love to all beings, and radiation. You know, a little more about him. He apparently played the violin. He had musical ability. And this probably came from, among other things, the second ray monad. Now, if I was going to go here amidst all the many charts, you know, and hope for some kind of response, I think we're in the moon in Cancer right now. And let's see, disciple. Let's see what we can find. So this is DLR. And what did he say here? DPR, was it? Yep, DPR. And they're right next to each other. And this is their ray charts. 1-5. And not everybody with a 1-5 was successful. Let's take a look here. And this is Disciple DLR. With Libra, the sign of balance, rising, and Chiron so close to the sun in Cancer, bringing some kind of potential healing into the ocean where glamorous reactions are formed. So I think, you know, at one point DK says you are needed because you really help create the balance in this group. And you may notice that the ruler of his ascending sign is Libra, and it's in fifth ray Leo. And it's in that part of Leo which is ruled by Corvus the crow, bringing the word of karma and the law and adjustment to the law. So this is one chart of a person who, not terribly equipped with the sixth ray, nevertheless, was very beneficial to those who had a lot more of it. Now, you might wonder, here you are working in this group, which seeks to follow DK's instructions, and you see he chose many of those who had the sixth ray because, you know, in the old saying, they created the problem, now they have to solve it. And that has to do with many of our environments in which we find ourselves forcibly placed. When it comes to Edna Cruz, she was born even earlier than he. She was one of the older disciples in the group, and she died early on, I think, relative to some of the later ones. I mean, some were born as much as 26 years later than she, so a whole generation. And again, the 1-5 is very strong, but something places her on rapport with an understanding of glamour, and is pretty much the fourth ray mind. And, let us say, the sign Pisces in which she was born. So, you know, you have to look out for your fitness for the task. Sometimes we're barking up the wrong tree, and, you know, one of the other seed groups may be the one or one of the ones to which we should be working. On the other hand, it cannot hurt to learn the methods of dissipating glamour. When it comes to, okay, this is natal, and I have to try to, yep, it should be DPR. I hope I have it correctly. Yeah, that's it. And you can right away see how fit she would be, because, you know, 1-5, and Pisces gives her, and Mercury still in Pisces, a real rapport with that astral plane, but in a more objective manner. And again, how interesting that Venus is the ruler of the ascendant. It's one of the rulers anyway. And just as for Charles Hill, Venus was placed in fifth ray Leo, now it's placed in fifth ray Aquarius. And so the fifth ray is accentuated. And in both cases, quite late in the sign, here for 27 degrees for Charles Hill, and all the way into 29 degrees for Edna Cruz. And I think she was a businesswoman, and she had a very strong law-abiding nature, as Saturn is in Capricorn at the very top of the chart. And notice, you know, what can Taurus be? Shining the light, you know, when we use this technique of light, we are shining the light from the forehead, the pineally stimulated Ajna center, into the astral plane. And Taurus is going to help us create that beam of light. So she's well equipped in that respect also. And I mean, she had a problem reconciling the second and the third ray, which DK says are difficult to reconcile, but she was definitely esoterically working behind the scenes. And you can see that because so many of those planets are in the 12th or quite subjective house. So, you know, lots of fifth ray, lots of rapport with how glamour becomes created, the discipline to handle it, the beam of light to shine upon it. Whether any of these disciples was thoroughly successful, we don't know. But they had something, you know, and that's why DK chose them for the task. And so it's very interesting then, you know, now a group of people in the Maurya Federation and in the USR, his meeting, Elena Dramcini, Francis. Yeah, Francis is there, and Jeff is there. Jeff Logie, and some others who are very good in astrology, and they are, BL is doing a lot of research, and basically trying to come up with truly accurate astrological charts which fill in the story behind the instructions that DK was giving them. See, DK knew their charts. He doesn't say a lot about it, probably for fear that we would become too personal about it and, you know, just start caring about the personality of the individual. When he critiqued the book called The Lives of Alcyone or Alcyone, about the last 50 lives or so of the sage Krishnamurti, he said, well, unfortunately, it was written almost exclusively from the personality angle, so he wants to avoid that. But still, when we are deeper students of the teaching, we're going to see what it is from the astrological chart which could, rightly guided, contribute to the eradication of glamour, and which, if succumbed to, would just reinforce the glamorous tendencies. Obviously, the glamour group is the one that had the most trouble, and you can understand why. This is a planet on which, or in which, the planetary logos has not solved yet the astral problem, and maybe at the judgment day that will be solved. So we do carry certain limitations given the cosmic clamors of the ones in whom we live and move and have our being. So I thought it was interesting to take a look there at two stabilizing, balancing disciples. Notice, as I say, they both had rising signs directing them toward the soul, which gave Venus as the initial ruler. Venus is very far ahead of the Earth, and Venus is our great model, and Venus stands for the fifth ray and the second ray, and for the perception that we have when we are in the consciousness of the solar angel and of the projection of the monad onto the higher mental plane. So Venus is very important in overcoming the tendency to glamour. Of course, Venus and any energy will have its possible difficulties. In other words, there are glamorous tendencies because of the equipment which we possess that you can associate with any of the astrological planets. And, you know, as much potential as they have, they can also lead us astray. Let these two, says the Tibetan, keep their lives free from any tendency to glamour. If they are rightly to serve their brothers as desired by me. You know, there were nine in each group that the Tibetan had pulled together. At least the first four groups had nine, and the political group only had three. It's okay. Only had three, and because he didn't get as far as organizing that group and the other groups that went beyond it, given the problems with the war, he had to take a different approach. So Everybody has liabilities. Everybody has positive qualities. When we're engaged in our group work with others, we have to think about the group integrity and the group consciousness generally, and we have to think what pluses and minuses we are bringing. I don't know how often we do that. Maybe we tend to think more in terms of the contribution we may be making to our fellow human beings and not of the liabilities which we inevitably bring along as well. So he's very interested in these two first-race souls with the clear thought of the fifth ray accented in both. He's very interested in them helping the group achieve stability and balance and detachment, which is, of course, one of the big problems with those who are affected glamorously. If they are rightly to serve their brothers as desired by me, I will give indication of their tendency in that direction in their personal instructions. And that's why it's so important to kind of read the lists which affiliate them with different groups, some with education, some with glamour, some with healing, and some with telepathy. And all of those subjects have little books that are quite wonderful and constituted, I think, instruction for the people who were gathered into the group. So we have different ways to read, and that's one of them. Take cognizance of the group in which these people find themselves, and sometimes DK in the book will even mention them, but at least what he says about how they are to improve oftentimes has so much to do with how they can make a better impact on their group life. He said, he's not really so interested in the individual except as the individual produces retardation or propulsion forward in the right way. So that's a little humbling. We're only as good as the contribution we make to the group. Okay, a little more. I will give indications of their tendency in the lessons. Okay, so you have to read those lessons very alertly. Just think, you get this letter from Alice Bailey. She's typed it out, listening to the Tibetan comment on your particular case and your contribution to the group, and there it is. And you read it, and you reread it, and you reread it, till it almost gets thin to touch, because you know that in a very few words, much wisdom is condensed and much indication is given about how you can improve your discipleship and your contribution to your group. The other group members are quickly prone to glamour, but this is a grief to them. In other words, they're very disappointed in themselves because they have so much sixth ray, ruling the emotional body generally, or sixth ray something anyway. It's a great grief to them, and they're ashamed. However, it can, be as quickly turned into an asset. They notice how they fall into glamour, and they can assess how other people as well may fall into glamour, and they understand. How can the world glamour be dissipated except by those who recognize it for what it is? and who have wrestled with it in their daily lives? Well, it's a good question. You know, when you have a teacher who can tell you in honesty, look, I've been there, so I know some of the ropes, I know the pitfalls, I know false attractiveness, and I know the real thing. Maybe I can be of use to you by sharing my experience. There has to be some kind of experience. You know, I'll just give you an example out of my own life. I've always been a musician, and my piano teacher said I was a prisoner of music. Well, you know, that's either good or bad. So music was just such a great aspirational and harmonizing factor in my life. But it was also a doorway through which many beauties of the astral plane could enter, but they were dangerous, and they were deluding, and they were misleading. And I can almost remember a time when I was singing some music, and suddenly I felt the descent of a veil. It was a tangible thing. And it really was a glamour, and it came in as a true manifestation, and was destructive in the life. So one has to pay close attention to these subtle detections of energies which may seem wonderful, but in fact they can delay and mislead the aspirant. Sometimes, well, you know, the story of the sirens, we all know it from Greek mythology. The sirens are extremely beautiful and they sing divinely. And if you beach your ship, follow your ship, you are destroyed on the rocks or destroyed by them, and your quest is temporarily stopped. So we all have the sirens, we all have the Gandharvas, whichever name we want to use. There's a sense in which the beauty of the astral plane can be misleading, and we just have to detect when that dynamic may be operating in our lives. How can there be success, he says, in removing world glamour through illumination? Remember, the most luminous of all the ray lords is the fifth ray lord. Unless this illumination is brought about by those who have learned to cast the searchlight of the soul, that's the beam we make, into the dark places and the glamour which surrounds them as individuals, and then see it disappear. You know, lots of psychotherapy, different method maybe, but it does cast the light upon the dark places in the psyche and detects them. They may not have been detected at all. And then we have to solve those particular issues. So we have to see it through and learn about projection, that we oftentimes see out there the very things we have not shone the light upon within our own psyche. It's a big shock, you know. And a lot of people don't want to go through it, and they'll say, well, that's a lot of nonsense, because X, Y, or Z really has those qualities. But when in fact, it's much more we that have become sensitive to those qualities, because we are the ones who have them and have not managed to dissipate them. Be not discouraged by this glamorous weakness, but regard your effort to understand the problem and your ability to arrive at the solution in your own lives as part of the contribution which you can make to this most stupendous of world problems. We do remember he's speaking as a master, and we're surrounded everywhere by the word glamour. When you go into an airport, they direct your steps past all the glamorous offerings. You have to kind of remain immune. You can feel what some of the sellers are trying to do and overcome you by a certain glamorous energy. So it is really everywhere, and DK is given rather to understatement than to overstatement, and he calls it a stupendous problem, and he has a horror of it, and Alice Bailey has a horror of the glamorous problem. It's not just, oh, you look so glamorous, there's a lot more to it. Solve your glamour by dwelling in the light and hold the mind steady in that light, and by learning to throw this light into the fogs of glamour on the astral plane. We really use visualization very strongly. Do not attempt to solve it as some aspirants so frequently do by saying, now I understand, whereas all that they do, and many of you do the same, is to react to a self-evident occult platitude. Okay, so he's given us a real technique and not just some kind of acquiescence to say that we understand when in fact we really don't. So it takes us up to page 99. I realize I'm kind of elaborating on things here. Mentioning many things, and so the progress at the present moment is not through many pages. But I'm just going to say that this is the end and this is the beginning. And now Tuya and I will concentrate on the conference. Because, although we could try to offer this these webinars and broadcasts after Sunday, we won't do it because it is such a pressure to prepare the conference that will now take, is that it? Yes. And 98, 99, 96, 98, and this is a 99, and this will be the reading number 53, which will be the next one, and I dare say it will be a month off, and a bit more than a month. So we'll have to decide, and we'll let you know.
It's tentatively scheduled for May 31st.
Okay. Well, I like that word, may. Maybe. May 31st. Tuya and I are coming back to Europe, and we'll arrive there on the 29th. And we'll see what it is possible to do and to recover from when we return. So I don't know whether it's I don't even want to say yet, whether it's a morning or evening session. I'm just going to put XXX. And that will have to do. So now the next time will be number 113, totaling to a 5, and we will get into the third kind of experience reached by the person who begins to recognize glamour in the life, and we're all familiar with it. It's the great Arjuna experience on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And unless we have gone through that and made the correct choice, we have not seized hold of what is called the crisis of opportunity. DK presents to us two types of crises. One is the crisis of opportunity, and later in life, if the opportunity has been rightly seized, the crisis of expression. Okay, friends, so I hope, you know, maybe something came up for you that was of interest. I'm obviously talking slower than I usually do, and that's part of the issue of the breathing. You know, sleep and breathing, they seem to go together. And, but in other words, I think we should be in a position to understand what we are talking about here. And if any of you have any question, this is the time.
Housekeeping, yep. Issue. End of Dolgi number 112, academic reading number 52.
Yeah, that's correct. Okay, I see it. This is 52, and this is going to be 53, right? Correct. Next one.
52, and it's the 12th of April.
Right. Thank you. All right. And it is a morning session, at least in Europe.
Right. And it's beginning on page 98 and ending on page 99.
Right. Thank you for the correction. And 99 is where we begin next time. Okay. We'll get through this book. Just hang in there, you know. It's a very valuable book and a little bit elusive. Glamours are difficult to see, and often when they're pointed out by others, maybe we'll see them. And when we see the results of the path that we have followed, good or ill, we know whether we've been on a glamorous path or whether something truer has been our goal and also our motivation. So we will discover how to verify glamour when we see it, when we encounter it. Maybe think back in your lives at those moments, you know, when you knew somehow that you were really engaged in glamorous activity or glamorous action, you know, somehow. I remember some of them. They usually embarrass me, you know. I said, oh, no, you know. DK said the disciple will naturally go through a phase of recrimination. It means you accuse yourself for what you have done. But then as detachment becomes more complete and successful, we might be able to get through that stage and not spend time with it and still improve the condition. Okay. Does anybody like to speak or ask about occult factors or anything that we may have been discussing here? Is there any hand or any preference that anything to offer that you would like to do?
Vera has raised her hand.
Okay, very good. And, okay,
Vera. You're
good.
I just want to say that I'm recently listening to the Blessed Ones, and I just want to express my gratitude to you that it's so helpful. In conjunction with pondering for such a long time on certain questions, it, when I listen to it, then sort of it's starting to gel more.
Yeah.
And it's being more like experiential. So thank you for making all those recordings. Because of the time zones, I'm not functioning 5 o'clock in the morning. So now I will be listening to just the recordings.
Yeah, no, I understand. And I, you know, many times in giving these programs, I say, uh-oh, I'm not functioning. But there is such a thing as automatic pilot. And trusting what one has done over the years and, you know, just trusting that one can understand and one can deliver something of value. DK, look, I mean, can we say, look, are we ready for installment number 3, given what we have assimilated and applied? And, well, from a larger timetable, we might say he evaluates that we are, but we know so many things that still are in this second dispensation, the Alice Bailey dispensation. We don't know whether it'll be Alice Bailey again. We don't know that. So much that remains to be absorbed. Look, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire was written for initiates and it was released in 1925. And who is going to be the expert now who says that he or she really, really fully understands A Treatise on Cosmic Fire? So he has not left us without material, and we can make it a part of ourselves according to the law of cohesion. You know, that's where the second ray comes in. You've got all these little bits of knowledge floating all over the place, and the second ray can make a cohesive wholeness out of them. And that's what we call pure reason, and we're working towards that constantly. And if we're a serious student, you know, a serious student, there is much more to absorb and share during these next 6 years, and it won't end there, of course. So we're very blessed to have Master DK have given us what he has. And even though it's just the ABCs, we're very blessed, and we just have to show that we have gratitude and appreciation for the gift, not by saying, oh, thank you, Master, but by absorbing and applying. That's how we show our gratitude.
Yeah. Well,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Laura. Okay. Anything else? Okay. That's it. Okay.
Anne Veronica has written, please explain a bit more the last paragraph. Now I understand, whereas all that they do, and many of you do the same, is to react to a self-evident occult platitude.
Yeah, and basically they're taking the simplicity of the platitude, and they understand the structure of the language, and they have a mental understanding of what it indicates. But understanding is much more than a mental act. We oftentimes call it loving understanding, or, you know, understanding and wisdom together. It involves the heart. It involves the heart and the head, and not just an easy response to, oh yeah, those words make sense. Now they make sense to me, so now I understand the whole thing. You have to get into the subject and to feel it and to immerse yourself in it and to see how you are misled and to see sometimes how you are, in fact, led to greater realization. So it's not just an easy response to words that can be understood. It's much more entering into a kind of experience, which is really identifying with the situation and not just keeping it all in the head. The head has to be there, of course, but the soul has to be there. And he sometimes talks in the beginning of this book about understanding means standing under, meaning that you somehow support and infuse the whole subject with your presence. You're intimate with it. You're not just repeating words, the experiences for which you have not deeply or often had. So, you know, sometimes I feel this like this, you know, okay, I know the Christ energy is about love. It's about loving understanding. It's about redemption. It's about saving. Those are words, and they are accurate words. And then maybe something will happen in one of the services that Tuya gives, and the piece of music comes on, and words that she will say are direct towards, and the veil lifts, and the words are no longer just words. There is an energy, not just the word understanding, but the energy of understanding. And everybody will know this because the change between our use of a word and our true entrance into the energy which the word represents can be quite dramatic. So I hope I'm being clear here. We need the experience of loving understanding, of loving, of seeing the light, of feeling the pressure of the will. And we need to feel different vibrations on different levels and the different types of will that there are intimately, intimately. That's what we need. And otherwise, it's just platitudes and words, useful up to a point. Maybe it interests some people, but it's not the real thing. I mean, if Christ was just words, nobody would follow him. But he was the real thing. And we oftentimes hear about the real thing. And may all of us become the real thing. I hope that's clear. And Veronica. Okay, anything else? Anything else?
Maybe a quote. And this quote says, "To pronounce a word is to evoke a thought and make it present. The magnetic potency of the human speech is the commencement of every manifestation in the occult world. To utter a name is not only to define a being, an entity, but to place it under and condemn it through the emission of the word, to the influence of one or more occult potencies. Things are, for every one of us, that which it, the word, makes them while naming them. The word, or the speech of every man, is, quite unconsciously to himself, a blessing or a curse. This is why our present ignorance about the properties or attributes of the idea, as well as about the attributes and properties of matter, is often fatal to us." Mm. And this is from Volume 1 of The Secret Doctrine, page 93.
It's very good. Very, very useful. A name is so much more than just a sound in space. It is to place oneself in intimacy and rapport, and even to command the downflow of energy from the entity whose name it is. So, you know, you can bind or you can apply correctly. This is magic, and the seventh ray is maybe the most careful of all the rays in many respects. And the magician, because there are so many pitfalls in the magical process, has to be extremely careful. What he pronounces, how he pronounces it, the tone, the pitch, all of that. DK says, we work now more with meaning than we used to, but still, when push comes to shove and occultism is what we're really doing, which is maybe not quite yet, the right method of invocation and of mantram will be indispensable. Knowledge and the careful will pursue it in that way or suffer the consequences. So thank you for that quotation. Useful, very useful, good one. Okay. Now, do we have time? Let's see. Yep. I think, you know, friends, oh, here's Alex, okay. And you were going to ask Alex to speak to you privately for just 5 minutes after this. You know, Alex, you know, I didn't sound tired. I sounded exhausted. It is late. Shall I just write an email? Let's see how it goes. Just hang in there, and an email may be required, but also we may be able to spend a little time. Thank you. There's so many things going on where glamour is rife and separating many good efforts that the hierarchy wishes to see be coherent and cohesive. Remember, it's Mars, it's the Black Lodge, it's the counterforce that has the reflex action of dividing under the spell of the great heresy of separateness, and we haven't really awoken to that. When you think about how people are talking about how they hate globalism, when the very thing that hierarchy is trying to promote is the global attitude and the one humanity and the eventual disappearance of boundaries and borders and trust among the people and sharing among the people, you see how far we have to go. And that's why, you know, the Tibetan said, when the Christ looks at all this, he surely must experience a certain horror with respect to what he must do, what he must accomplish. You don't usually think of the Christ as being, you know, taken back by the scope of the requirement, but this is what the Tibetan has said. And as we begin to look realistically at the way that people are promoting separation in so many different ways, it's a very, very serious problem and so easy to justify from a limited point of view. So just hang in at the end and let's see what we can do. Now, if you're wondering why I'm a little tired here, it may be jet lag, but I've spent the whole day doing university taxes, and yesterday, and the day before. And I met the accountant today, and that's enough to take the wind out of your sails. Very nice man, but we're just scratching the surface after 4 hours of work. So, you know... In astrology, taxes are listed with death and sacrifice, and for good reason as well. Okay, now, let's get into our meditation, because I cannot disguise from you that it would be good to get a little sleep. And this is it. Okay, very good. And we will enter the silence for a little while and feel the energy grow between us in this silence. There's no question but that a group, a subjective group, is indeed a group and has power that can be felt on the inner side. Now, our protective formula involves the long arm cross, which he calls the cross of divinity. And we're used to this now. And as we make the cross, we imagine that our fingers, especially the thumb and the two first fingers, which symbolize the Trinity, you see, are tracing the light. As a soul, I work in light. And darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. And so before each one of us is that lighted cross, and before the entire group is the imagined lighted cross with all of its protective powers. And we bring up the light that we're going to work with to create our searchlight. It will be the light of vitality and of matter from below to the mental plane. And the light of the lower mind itself, which through reasoning can often reach the truth or something very close to the truth. And the light of the soul. Try to feel that as if above the head. when we bring that soul light down and the three lights merge as one. Just look at that merging. Look at the merging. And it has in it vitality and matter and reasoning and unity and pure reason also. A number of lights are blending. And we say together, as we see the lights blend, we say, the light is one. And in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Remembering that the light of day is the light of Scorpio, which rules the intuitional Buddhic plane. And now to confirm the Om. Now we're going to extend our light out onto the astral plane, into that subtle world. It's not truly a subjective world. That begins with the soul. But it's a subtle world, and we're going to extend our light onto that level, the astral plane. And so we say, radiance and power are we. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth. The inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. That's what we want to do, turn the darkness, the fogs, the miasmas, the veils, the shrouds of the astral plane into day. And as these words are said, the group visualizes the great searchlight turning on and turning that light upon the astral plane. Let's make sure we all visualize that. And now our beam of light, which is both a mechanism of perception and a mechanism of dissipation and destruction, we strengthen that with power upon the beam. The light is focused on the goal. Now, we're going to continue, you know, with this problem where the group is not seen, or there's partial perception, and the greatest good of the greatest number is not considered. We call this egoism, philosophically, and then when we become fixated upon the part that egoism reveals, then we have egotism. And it's like the willful decision to see only the part and think only of the welfare of the part and not of the whole. So, that is still our focus. We know that humanity sees very partially, and they enthusiastically support their narrow vision and insist that all other approaches are incorrect and a challenge to their habitual vision. And so often that vision is very, very far away from that which is for the good of humanity. So think for a moment of what keeping the eyes upon the little self has done within the human race and upon the planet. Have noticed that there are reports everywhere now about the rising of different forms of slavery. You know, this is about as far as it goes. You are so captured with your own importance that you are willing to rob another person of their freedom, so long as they can serve important you. this is occurring widely and in a number of different fields. Some people are out and out slaves. Other people work in conditions that one can only describe as slavery, and it has everything to do. You know, you hire people from another country, you feel superior to them, more important to them, you mistreat them, you even deny them their life. It's very serious. And it has to do with the separations which are occurring. So, realizing the ill which egoism and egotism have brought, we'll consider egotism as a glamour, and we'll use these words of power at first together like this, and then in the silence, using one's own particular method. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of egotism. And of course, with a true sense of proportion, that would never occur. Humility is a great enemy of egotism, and that's why the sun falls in the sign Libra. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour of egotism from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind this glamour of egotism. Now we'll enter into our 5 minutes of complete silence, and as DK says, visualize the light penetrating into the glamour and producing its weakening and dissipation. we have to come to the point where we recognize the beam of light as discovering that which we did not know before, and disintegrating, taking apart, dissipating, scattering these barriers to the right sense of the group, of being in the right place, doing the right thing at the right time with the right people, and to their benefit, as just as they benefit you. A true sense of proportion and humility will cure egotism, just the way, as Master Moria says, cosmic perception will cure it. If we look at the great planetary deities and the stellar deities and the constellational deities, and then, as the Tibetan says, we look at microscopic man, how can we be proud, which leads to wickedness? How can we cultivate unnatural and hurtful desires? So we work a little bit every time, and this time, as usual, we withdraw our light, our beam, our living beam from the astral plane, into the mental plane and the three lights. And this light can be called upon whenever we need it, and the light of the soul can return. The light of mind can hold its position. The light of vitality can take its position within matter. And a great sun, symbolic of so many ideal states, can shine upon the astral plane, dissipating these states which lead to bondage, to glamour, to limitation, to imprisonment, really. But we can do something about it. So let us now sound the Om three times. With the inner affirmation that we have done something, the belief that we have done something upon the three planes of personality endeavor, especially the astral, but aspects of the lower mental and etheric, physical. And we just see the sun shining, and there is a clarity which removes this atavistic tendency towards egotism. Oh. And as we succeed, we rid ourselves of the etheric veil of distortion, rather impulsion first, chaos, the veil of distortion, exaggeration or minimization, and the veil of separation, the lower mind, doing what it does under illusion, and even, finally, the veil of aspiration, where we desire much but do little. It can be effective what we're doing, and let's keep doing it. On Saturday, there will be the Soul, Destiny of the Nations. Last two times, we took up, I think, Mozambique and the neighboring country to Mozambique, where the cyclone also was devastating. And we may continue that. As I said, the Ask series is coming to a temporary end for a little while as we really throw our attention into becoming forerunners of the light, building the foundation, spreading the word so that people hear, let's call it, the good news of the esoteric worldview. Very happy that you're attending, and thank you for your participation. So we'll keep going this week, and Sunday will be our last broadcast of that kind. There may be some other broadcasts related to the second, the blue full moon. Tuya and I will consult on that, and probably some notification is already sent. Okay, lots of love, many blessings, and we will be working with you shortly. And maybe, Alex, if you want to stay on there for a little while, that would be good. And the rest, you can depart in peace. And the Brexit issue, you know, is very big these days, so Alex is front and center on that.